is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media's Entertainment News Network. We're about to speak to Peter Kang, who is a partner at Sidley Austin in San Francisco. Welcome to Etopia Media, and why don't you pronounce your name properly for everyone?
Sure. Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to speak with you. It's Peter Kang. I'm a patent and intellectual property partner in the San Francisco office of Sidley Austin.
Good. We met at the Digital Hollywood Conference, where you were on a panel, and
right.
I'm taking this opportunity to share some of your insights into this into the field of intellectual property as it applies to new media for our listeners. The first set of questions I wanted to ask you had to do with the proper legal and business use of a media that people might want to review. That would include things like DVDs. Obviously, no one can go into a movie theater and videotape the show off of the screen. That's completely illegal. But people can buy DVDs. They can TiVo their TV shows. They can take magazine ads out of the magazine. And the billboards are around us everywhere, touting one product or another or service. And I guess I wanted to find out from you what the existing legal structure is in terms of people who want to repurpose or comment on the content or the approach of the kind of media that's used for advertising.
Sure. So let's draw a distinction. There's one type of repurposing, which would be to create a commercial or a creative work that derives from the original work. So that's what's called a derivative work,
right,
under copyright law. And that is an infringement of a copyright, because you're not simply commenting, you're actually creating a new work,
right,
for a derivative work. So you need to get a license from the original copyright owner in that case to do that. That's why you hear about all these cases involving sampling in the music industry,
right,
and things like that. And that's why, same thing with mashups and things like that. But to go to the other type of repurposing, which you mentioned, which is commentary and criticism, in copyright law, that's typically falls under the heading of what's called fair use. And again, you have to be careful in this field. There are allowable uses of some portions of copyrighted work for fair use for,
right,
what's called a criticism, comment,
right,
news reporting,
right,
teaching, that kind of thing.
Right.
But it's there's no bright line test, right? So there's a multi-factor test that the courts look to see whether somebody's later use is actually constitutes fair use.
You give us just a little hint about what some of those factors are in the non-bright line area there.
Sure. So this is all set forth in the Copyright Act, and there's all this case law on it, but the first factor would be the purpose and character of the use. For example, are you doing it for a commercial nature,
right,
or for a nonprofit educational use?
So does that mean there would be a difference whether you were teaching a course, let's say you're a professor teaching a course on advertising and media. Would you have carte blanche to show anything you wanted?
Well, again, carte blanche. It's difficult to say carte blanche,
right,
in this area.
But the maximum amount of leeway.
You would have more leeway,
right, certainly,
let's say, if it's a non-profit educational purpose. The courts, obviously, for, I think everybody could understand, for kind of common sense reasons,
right,
would tend to look more skeptically at somebody who's using someone else's copyrighted work for a commercial purpose,
right, right,
and trying to claim that that's a fair use.
Well, does it matter whether you're at a public university or a private university, or whether anyone in the public can come in, or if whether you're a freelance instructional person who wants to put online or put in real space a course on contemporary advertising media?
Well, the private versus public university distinction is probably not that going to be that big a distinction.
Right.
But when you start getting into, educational services that are being provided over the net, where,
right,
there may be some registration fee involved or some kind of tuition involved,
or even advertising associated,
right,
with it.
Right. Again, the courts are going to start to look more skeptically at that and not consider it to be a non-profit education.
So if you're giving away your criticism, you're more able to do this than if you're paying people to hear your criticism.
Right. I mean, so obviously the traditional kind of fair use that most people think about is movie reviewers.
Right.
Right? And they show clips.
Right.
Right. And they show, but they don't show the whole movie.
No.
Right.
Apparently, though, to get the clips, they've got to contact the studios.
They do, absolutely.
And the studio owns the rights to the clips and only presumably gives them to people who don't consistently pan their films.
Well,
in fact, sometimes they don't.
That may be a business issue. I don't think it's much of a legal issue.
Okay.
But you're right. Obviously, getting access to a movie clip is going to be harder than you mentioned, like billboards before and all that. Again, if you've looked at any Slate has a column devoted to occasionally that reviews advertising.
Right.
And they will show still images from advertisements, but they'll often link to, if there's an online version from the advertising agency or the company who's advertising, link back to the original. But they usually don't have the commercial itself embedded in the article.
And it's pretty much okay to have a still from the original as long as it's somewhere else where the video itself is stored.
Well, again, okay, so if there's a non-profit educational purpose or commentary purpose, you've got some factors in your favor.
Right.
Now, Slate makes money off of advertising.
Right.
So there's an issue there. So this goes to what's good business practices and what's the safer thing to do versus what may be legally necessary. The safer thing to do, obviously, would be to just get clearance from the copyright owner, and if you're doing it for commentary purposes, criticism purposes, that really aren't going to compete with the copyright owner. They usually won't object.
Right.
And it's just a matter of getting the clearance in that case. I mean, the other piece of it when you're talking about motion pictures and things is, how much, what portion of the copyrighted work are you going to take?
The intention is to distinguish between someone who shows a film for an hour and says, I didn't like this scene or something.
Right.
Clearly the purpose is to sell access to the content.
Right.
What about television commercials, which are easily recordable off the screen by any number of technologies, or commercials that are on the Internet and are equally easily recordable? Is there a difference with commercials? People are happy to have their commercials rerun, or they're not happy to have them rerun along with a deconstruction of the commercial?
Well,
is there a case law on that?
I don't know if there's case law, but there are certainly business practices out there.
Tell us what those are.
Well, it's a common sense thing. Obviously, people want, if they're going to have their advertisements reviewed, say, or commented upon, as you mentioned with the movie reviewers, they are going to want to know who they're giving access to.
Right.
Because, let's be clear, fair use is an exception to copyright infringement.
Right.
So it's the burden for the fair user to show that they're going to be fairly using the work.
Right.
So the better practice is often to get the clearance from the original copyright owner. Because if you are somebody who the copyright owner is not particularly fond of,
right,
or you're somebody who repackages the commercial in a way that disparages the original product or the advertisement, you can get into trouble in other areas of law.
Right.
Outside of copyright law, there are things like trade disparagement and things like that.
Right.
That could get you into trouble that way, because it's a very complicated area, and obviously the best thing usually is to get some kind of clearance from the owner.
In practice, does this mean, because if something as simple then as recording a lot of car commercials showing people driving happily through the countryside, and then one of two things, either creating a derivative creative work that would intersperse the delightful pastoral scenes in the commercials with footage of the Hollywood freeway at 5 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and say, this is the image from the advertisers, here's the reality, who needs a 400 horsepower car to sit in traffic? Does that infringe copy? Would that tend to be seen as infringing on their copyright?
Probably. I mean, that is very similar to sampling of music, right?
Right.
It's a video sample, and as everybody knows from the music cases, the original owners of the song, you're only using 10 seconds of it, three seconds, 1 second of the song, but yet they get clearance, they get royalties, and they get their say. And there are certainly plenty of other cases where there were mashups done or things like that.
Tell our listeners what a mashup is.
A mashup is where somebody, either a DJ or they're a hobbyist who do this, will take digital music and try to combine two songs, maybe three or four songs, in a way that combines elements of all the songs digitally, so that you end up with kind of a mosaic song at the end of the day.
Right.
And some people don't like that, right? Some of the original artists don't like the, what may have been done with it, and it's their, you know,
they might, they might not like it either artistically or because they're not getting any money out of it, or
both. Right, or both, right?
Right.
And so that is certainly, it's certainly fair that they should be able to, you know, have some say in how and certainly in mashups especially, more than just a little sample clip are often used.
Right. Okay, well, as we wrap up this question, give us sort of the overall view. It seems to me that commercial advertisers are pretty well situated to protect the integrity of their commercial message from much interference.
I would agree with that as a general matter, especially these days, given how much money is often spent making what are essentially mini feature films as commercials. And
that's
so
right.
There is often a large investment in creating the films, and with that level of investment you see these days, you're going to see an equal level of kind of legal protection.
Okay, good. Okay, I think we've established some information about that isn't generally known previously. The second point I wanted to deal with has to do with what I guess could be called found content.
Sure.
And there are sort of two categories of that. One is material in the real world, buildings, historic landmarks, sort of, you know, who owns the right to a picture of the Eiffel Tower or an office building. And the idea also as applied to people in the street who you shoot on video from your car or while you're on the street, and people like that, and whether you're including that in, and whether it matters what you're including it in after you've done it, and then related to that is the question of material in cyberspace. MySpace has millions of photographs of people. There are chat rooms that have lots of conversations, and I'm wondering. And there are plenty of dating sites where people have put their pictures up. All of these involve material that could through digital means be repurposed and used. What are the general principles that regulate the use of these kinds of materials?
Okay, there isn't really. I mean, you can have content that has been dedicated to the public, but there really isn't such a thing as found content in the sense of abandoned copyright. The copyright exists in the work, and
it belongs to the person who created it?
Unless they've assigned it to someone else. That's right.
And they don't need to do anything about it. If they take a picture of themselves and put it up on a website or on a social networking site, the creator of that content owns the copyright to that content, is that right?
Right. It used to be people who were maybe my age or older remember the C in the circle thing, the you know, copyright whatever, right?
Right, C in the circle, copyright. Right.
Right. You don't even need to do that anymore. It's still a good idea to do it.
Right.
But to own the copyright, you just need to be the author of a work that's fixed in a tangible medium of expression. That's
okay.
The legal test.
Right.
And that's it. And now you get substantial procedural benefits if you register your copyright in your work.
Right.
But that doesn't mean the copyright doesn't pre-exist before the registration. The copyright still exists.
So it's the default value is if you create some work in a tangible form and you publish it, you own the copyright absent any assignment of it to someone else by you.
Generally, that's true.
Okay.
Right.
So that means that it's illegal for anyone to take photos off of social sites and make a book out of them, for example.
Yeah, that's right. And the other problem with a lot of the issues that can come up that in some of the scenarios you're positing, especially involving the social sites and personal web pages and pictures of people in chat forums and chat rooms and things like that, is you get into rights of privacy. Everybody who's in these chat rooms are not celebrities, they're not public figures, they're private individuals.
Right.
There are rights of privacy under both state and federal law, and it is often, an invasion of someone's privacy to take their image in a way that wasn't intended and repurpose it in a way that would be offensive to that person.
So that invasion of privacy is on top of copyright infringement.
It's a separate area of law. That's right.
And if for example someone records chat room conversations with political or sexual or personal material going on, who owns the rights to that work of art, if you could call it that? That material. Who owns the rights to that?
That is interesting. I don't know if anybody. It would in that case it would depend on the terms of use of the chat room provider.
Right. I would guess that the chat room providers would find themselves in a kind of ambiguous position, and maybe they'd feel ambivalent about it because they don't want to have responsibility for what's said. On the other hand, maybe they would want to have the rights to it. Is there any case law on that? Is there any experience with that?
I don't think so. And they'd have, I think they would have trouble arguing they have a right to it because they didn't create the content. It's the participants in the chat room.
And any more than a stationery store that sells you a journal would have the right to the material you wrote in your journal.
That's exactly right. Or you know, even going back more archaically, the owner of a, you know, of a public square who set up some soapboxes for people to stand on,
right,
doesn't own the speeches that the people make when they get up and actually talk.
Okay, well, but then is the conversation without copyright, or are the parts of it owned by the people who created it, all of whom are, in almost every case, in most cases, in chat rooms, are anonymous to start with? Do they own their sentences, or if the conversation is the work of art, who owns that? Do they own it collectively?
Is there no one's
dealt with these issues before?
I don't think anybody's really dealt with these issues. I'd have to look it up. But the one thing I probably say with some level of certainty is the verbatim writings that come across in a chat room,
right,
are short enough and substantially lacking in, if not content, literary merit,
right,
that they may not even be considered literary works. In other words,
I see. Okay,
I'm not sure that they would be considered copyrightable in and of themselves. I'd have to check that.
But if they're not even literary works, then can anyone use them? And could they, by repurposing them, make them into literary works?
Now that's an interesting question. If they are not subject to copyright in the first place,
right, which you seem to be hinting at, because
right,
they're just gibberish in
right,
a sense,
right? Then there is no bar to using them, right?
Okay. Now what we're talking about here is kind of archaic in a way because it's text we're talking about.
Yes.
As bandwidth increases and so on and so forth, in the kind of the milieu we're talking about here, video, online video, shared online video,
yes,
is going to become the standard. We haven't really even talked yet about cell phones and photo cell phones and so on, where vast amounts of video are being created. As a general principle, is the law keeping up with that?
No. Well, the law always lags behind technology.
Okay.
Right? Because which is really as it should be. The law has to react to what's happening in the real world.
What's the latest lagging thing that the law has said about people's rights to take pictures of other people on their cell phones and put them on their websites or mash them up into something else and so on?
Which was
the first part of the second question.
Sure.
What are people's rights to privacy if they're celebrities, if they're not celebrities,
yes,
and what are artists' rights to use that?
Okay, so cameras have been around for a long time. So there's a large body of case law about when you can take people's pictures and
right,
and use them and not. And the general thing is, I mean, there are all these cases where, you know, people bring hidden video cameras and things into locker rooms,
right,
and things like that, and that's obviously illegal.
There's a term of art of a reasonable expectation of privacy,
right? That's right. And so certainly, you know, it is not a good idea probably to, you know, take strangers' pictures and try to package it into a book or a website or something,
right?
And you know, with the expectation that people are not going to get offended. I know there have been cases actually with other law firms, not mine, where, you know, some law firms have the pictures of their attorneys up, right?
Right.
And there have been unscrupulous websites out there that have kind of scraped the pictures off and done things with them, and you know that's caused some problems.
Right.
And that's why often a lot of companies no longer put pictures of their employees up.
Right.
For that very.
Because people put them, you know, take off their heads and put them on bodies doing things that they shouldn't be doing in public if people want to know that kind of stuff.
I won't go into detail.
Right.
But there were things done to the pictures that were never intended, or, you know,
right,
that the person depicted in the picture
right,
was certainly offended.
And do they have legal recourse against that?
Well, the problem is often those kinds of, you know, unscrupulous, unintended things are done by people it's hard to identify or track down,
right,
and all that.
It's a little like getting a mustache painted on your picture.
That's right. I mean, theoretically, they probably would have legal recourse if they could ever find out who
right,
who did it and who posted
right,
it, but that's a problem.
Right.
Yeah, that's just a problem of investigation.
Right.
So, you know, I think you talked earlier about, you know, taking video, people walking down the street
right,
and all that. Again, I know news organizations have to deal with this all the time.
Right. And how do they deal with that?
Well, if... genuine.
Including people, someone doing stand-up, a news correspondent doing stand-up,
right.
And all those people, there's a the big networks, you know, there's nobody there except the building, but local news is often they're somewhere and there's crowds of people making funny faces behind them as the other extreme. What are the rights of everyone concerned in that situation?
Typically, I think they would say there was consent, especially if somebody is looking at the camera directly and they want to get filmed, which is often the funny face
right.
thing you're talking about.
Right.
The bigger problem is the kinds of shots where there isn't a reporter, but the camera is kind of set up on the street just to capture foot traffic.
Right.
You know, and there'll be voiceover over it or something afterwards.
Right.
And again.
Because I noticed when they show a lot of pictures, a lot of stories about obesity lately.
Right.
And you see these people who are obese, and you never see their faces.
That's right.
And that's for a particular legal reason here, isn't it?
Well, again, it's because people don't want to be disparaged, right?
Right.
And you don't want to put yourself as a content creator to be even accused of disparaging someone portraying them in a poor light.
Is it likely, though, that those people assigned consent forms to be included in those news stories, or did the news organizations need that permission to do that?
So we're outside of copyright law now. We're in the realm of privacy. So I believe typically, if they don't show identifying features,
right,
and not just the face, but if somebody has something distinctive about them, but generally, if they don't show the face and don't show identifying features, then
right.
it's okay.
Okay.
In general.
So, as a general, probably all of these obese people on the street pictures, they haven't gotten permission, but they don't need it because they're not specifically identifiable.
Right. Now, if people are specifically identifiable and then they're shown in a way that, you know, could be construed as disparaging or embarrassing or in any way that might cause any concern by the content creator, the better thing to do is to get a waiver and a clearance from that person.
So if you go to the Santa Monica Promenade,
yes.
and there are people promenading,
yes.
and there are people performing, and you videotape the performance, apart from the content of the performance, does one always need to have legal clearance from the artist or the author of the material? What about the people who are passing in the background?
Okay, yes and yes for the performance.
Right.
Right? So because the performer has his own performance rights, and the author of the, if it's a musical work or whatever, has their own rights in the musical composition. The people walking around in the background, they may not be on screen enough, long enough, and they may not even be identifiable.
Right.
Their faces, because they may be walking in a direction you can't even make out who they are.
Right.
There's probably no privacy issue with people in the background.
Right. And that's whether the material is used either in a news story or a fictional work.
Yeah.
It's the same
for both the same, because these days, you know, the news media is a big industry in and of itself.
Right.
You get into questions of how much of that performance do you need to actually show
right.
for journalistic purposes. And if you show the entire performance, again, you get into the factors that I was talking about, is the extent of the use of the work.
Right. Okay. One sort of final sort of sidelight here.
Sure.
Who owns the rights in all of the countless surveillance cameras that are now operating, both known and unknown to people? What's the law on that?
If those cameras are owned by private individuals,
right?
Presumably the content on those cameras, putting aside whether the camera owner needed to get clearance from somebody or whatnot,
right.
The content of those tapes are owned by the camera owner.
Well, let's say you own a jewelry store,
sure,
and you've got several cameras, some visible, some not visible,
sure,
and you want to see everybody who's coming in,
sure.
And let's say you're a high-end jewelry store in Beverly Hills, you're going to have well-known celebrities coming in sometimes, do the celebrities own that content? Does the jewelry store owner own it?
So there are two issues there.
Right.
There's who owns the media, the expression, which is the what's on the tape.
Right.
And that would be the jewelry store owner.
Right.
However, when you're talking celebrities, the flip side of the right to privacy is the right to publicity.
Right.
Celebrities and known figures, have a right to publicity, and that gives them the right to control exploitation of their likeness.
Well, that sounds like more of a right to privacy than publicity. It's a right to not being publicized.
Well, no, but it's the right to properly control the commercial exploitation of it. Right.
Right.
Because a public figure wants to be able to be in public.
Right.
And they want to, and often people who are celebrities make money off of, you know, how and when they're portrayed.
That's right.
Right. So they would definitely, putting aside the copyright issues, have control over how they're portrayed in any random, you know, photograph or you know, hidden videotape.
Right, and that's a right that a civilian doesn't have.
Because it's the flip side of the right to privacy.
Right.
The non-celebrity, ordinary, you know, person, you and me,
right,
walking around, we have a right to privacy where we wouldn't want a videotape of us going into a jewelry store or whatever to be shown on the internet, because that invades our privacy. Who needs to know that I went into a jewelry store? That
right. Oh, I'm a little confused. Does the celebrity going in there have less or more of a right than the civilian to control the use of that material?
Okay, so what ends up happening is by giving up their privacy...
You mean like going out in public?
Yes.
Right.
Right. The celebrity has... The right to control the exploitation of their public image. However, if they show up at a public event,
right, the purpose of which, if they go to the red carpet,
that's right,
it's understood that they're there to be seen and that they're going
to
perform.
And nobody needs to get clearance from them to get to take their picture,
right,
and then show it,
right, anywhere and whatever. That's
right.
Part of the bargain.
Right.
But if they're off duty as a celebrity. Then they have more of a presumption of a right to privacy than when they're on duty.
The problem you get into the problem is when are they in public and when are they not, and all that. Certainly, when there's a commercial goal in exploiting the hidden videotape of somebody, going into a jewelry store or whatever.
All the paparazzi want to do that.
Right.
They want to sell it.
The paparazzi they will often take the position that they can take the pictures when they're in public anywhere.
Right.
Question whether a private jewelry store is a public forum or not.
Right.
Because you often don't see the paparazzi barge into like a restaurant, right?
Right.
To try to take somebody's picture, even though anybody can go into a restaurant.
Right.
They wait out. They usually wait outside.
Right.
So from the journalism, side of things and the paparazzi side of things, I'm pretty sure to safeguard themselves, they restrain themselves to, public thoroughfares and public areas.
Right.
So that's why they would drive around after somebody's car.
But when we were talking about fair use earlier, this is sort of fair game then, that celebrity, because there's obviously a lot of conflict around this, it seems to me, both on the legal side and on the practical side.
Yes.
That you see a lot of scuffles on television about paparazzi trying to take pictures of celebrities when they're trying to be left alone, and the paparazzi say, well, they're just pretending to want to be left alone. They want to be seen so that the next movie will be well attended, and so on. Is this a fluid area of the law, or just a fluid area of practice, or what's the situation?
Touched on it. It's really a business issue, right?
Right.
It's how entertainers and public figures deal with the media.
Right.
And that's. It's not really a copyright issue. It's not even really a right of publicity issue. It's really how are they going to mediate that relationship? Because to a certain extent, they both need each other.
That's right. Because when a new movie is coming out, people are going to be on the Tonight Show and the Letterman Show and the morning shows and so on. But they don't want to be anywhere else and be seen in an unflattering way or even a non-glamorous way, it would seem.
And often, you read articles and interviews. They don't like being, constantly being barraged with photographers when they're just trying to go out and buy a gallon of milk or something.
Exactly. Okay. I think that about wraps it up. You want to say anything final about where the state of the law is on this and how you imagine it's going to be changed if it is by even more intrusive and more easy to use media capture devices?
Well, as you pointed out, video is, with the spread of broadband, video is going to be much more ubiquitous, both on the net and with the cameras proliferating just all over the real world.
Right.
And, as we've touched upon, it raises many copyright issues, it raises all sorts of privacy concerns, all sorts of public policy concerns, I think, that we're going to have to deal with on an ongoing basis, and it'll be both, I think, challenging and exciting.
Okay, and it sounds like there'll be plenty of work for copyright lawyers.
I certainly hope so.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for sharing some of this information. I hope we get more people thinking about it, and we'll continue to monitor the situation.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.